Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Supported by thegeldeden.com. To browse and buy vintage lead shirts, player signed prints, and classic memorabilia, go to thegeldeden.com. The Square Ball, by the fans, for the fans, since 1989. To buy the magazine, read the blog, and to download the podcast, visit thesquareball.net.
Hello, this is John Deitch. I'd have loved to sign that Johnny Houston for my Watford, but Paul Lambert got there first. It's the kind of transfer news that really sticks in my throat.
Hello, welcome to podcast 43. Johnny's split, but we're not stopping. And I'm joined by Michael.
Hello.
Moscow White.
Hello there.
And Oddie.
Hello.
We've just put out issue 6 of the Square Ball fanzine. It went on sale for the Ipswich match, sold very well indeed. We've got about 250 copies left, which will go on sale against Birmingham. What's it got in it, gents?
I think everyone bought it just because they wanted a last look at Houston on the cover. And a massive Ken Bates mask in the middle, which proved to be a popular thing for the weekend. It's what all the kids are wearing now.
Frightening their friends.
This one's got a functioning cake hole, though. That's what differentiates it from your average Bates out mask.
And what's the purpose of this cake hole to which you're referring?
You put cake through it.
And?
And wine.
Why is that?
Are you not familiar with the concept of human beings eating?
Just go with me on this. I'm just going for the benefit of for the audience.
Have your cake and eat it, yes. With our free Ken Bates cake hole face mask. But it doesn't say you can have your wine and drink it. But anyway, and it's got a picture of a fat Ben Fry. It's got everything, really.
It also features another magnificent picture of Ben Fry with a moustache being held up by a kind of Santa Claus Ken Bates.
Well, Fry wrote for us this time, didn't he?
He did. It was very good of him, actually. He took a break from his heavy rimming schedule.
There's also a magnificent Andy Hughes interview where he tells us how good Leeds fans are. What he did.
There's also a lovely entry from a Bradford City fan. It's not the article he initially promised, but you can see the emails which were exchanged between him and, well, a drunk me while on my phone at a bonfire. And I received an email from him and he wasn't very happy. He was handed a photocopy of a previous issue which wrongly stated the reasons that Leeds are hated and he would put the record straight once and for all, except then he didn't.
I really love the fact that photocopies of bits of our mag are being handed round at Bradford City.
It was faxed to him.
Furious Bradford fans.
And it made him so angry that he really couldn't do anything. Yeah.
So you can get that online, either digitally, which costs £1, or in paper format, £1.50 plus postage, or you can buy it at Elland Road. But if you want to get it on the website, have a look at thesquareball.net. Right then, coming up in part 3 of the podcast, we'll be chatting to Phil Hay from the Yorkshire Evening Post. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's do part 1, which is White Watching. First game in this bit. Crystal Palace won, Leeds won the draw away down at Selhurst Park. Michael?
I went, I believe. No, it was disappointing, all in all. We started quite poorly, they scored, then it was nothing happened really. They didn't seem particularly bothered attacking anymore. They were happy just to see what we had, which wasn't very much. Then they had a man sent off and you expected us to come stronger, and we didn't really, until Snodgrass came on and saved us again.
Well, please, can we keep him?
At least get to keep bits of him. If he has anything else removed before the end of the transfer window, a kidney, what else might, a bollock, we could just keep whatever he doesn't need, whatever he's got two of. You need two eyes, two arms.
Maybe Ken could put them on eBay and generate some more revenue streams.
Well, you've got to say fair play to Snoddy for coming back only a fortnight after having his bits removed.
Bionic Snod. He's tougher than medicine. stronger than science.
It's like Erin Brewery's mid in Scotland from girders.
And it was a good goal as well. I think there were at least four passes in that move.
Ooh, imagine that.
And one of them involved, at least two of the passes involved McCormack, because he ran, he moved. He passed the ball inside and then he ran a bit, and then the ball was passed to somebody else and it went back to him. It's like, this is almost, you know, expansive football. And then he crossed it, Snodgrass. It was just like watching Barnsley.
Did you get a sense when we went one behind so early that it was just going to be another one of those days?
I didn't think we'd score, I must say, certainly until Snodgrass came on. Beckio was out of form again. Didn't seem to win any headers. His first touch is still occasionally going to one of our players, but it's not meant to. He's trying to just control it, and it's sort of bouncing off everywhere. In midfield, we just looked very short of ideas. We were just passing the ball around in front of their back four, who had a kind of attitude of, what are you going to do now? And we didn't know.
I think as well, they went down to 10 men, but it starts Speroni in goal. He was a damn fine keeper.
Yeah, that save from the double save was impressive. The one from Lees in particular was an amazing save.
It's Clayton's shot, isn't it? And then rebounds to Lees, and Lees, he does that. You can tell he's celebrating. And then Speroni just gets down and pushes it away. And Lees returns to his neutral position of looking slightly disappointed with
life. Take the positives from the game. I thought Lees did well. Won a lot in the air, looks very steady, and as he does in every game now. I think he's one of the highlights of this season.
Please, can we keep him?
We're not keeping any of these players. Don't get attached to them.
Do you think, I mean, whilst we're dishing out the cliches, it was a classic case of not being able to break down 10 men?
It's harder to play against 10 men. Well, this
although
is a fact. Our last three results maybe show otherwise.
But. They did it again last night in the Carling Cup. I caught a bit of it on the radio that they went down to 10 men.
Do the cup competitions go this late in the year?
This one does.
I thought they're normally over by January.
It's the semi-final, so it's not... the Carling Cup always confuses me for a start. Don't make it even more confusing. Because they were defending a 1-0 lead from the first leg, they just... And then when they went down to 10 men, they seemed to do the same thing of just not trying to attack.
Parked the bus, as it were.
Yes, in front of their really good goalkeeper. So.
Did you find yourself cheering for them?
Against
bit.
Cardiff? Yeah. Yes.
Particularly because they've got Doogie.
That's just because one, Cardiff should lose, and two, Doogie. Doogie will do. I like Doogie. I know how to Doogie.
How was your day out in Croydon then? Did you manage to get back all right? Or?
It's a bloody long way from London. I would suggest that it's not in London, given you get to London and then you've got about another 4 or 5 hours
I think
of
it's
travel.
A city in its own right. Don't quote me on this. Hey, maybe the listeners could tell us, or Oddy could just tell us.
It's
a city in its own right, yeah.
If you also know that, email in. But, yeah, you kind of get to King's Cross and you generally think, right, 20 minutes on a tube somewhere.
We're here now. Yeah. We're here.
But no. Smoke?
No. It was miles out. It was a standard London away day, really.
Sellers Park still looking as nice as ever.
I don't mind Sellers Park, even though it's a dump. I kind of like that sort of ground. It's better than going somewhere boring.
Where
the ground, you can tell which side you're at, which is nice. Mm. I hate grounds where you can't... You get there and you think, is that the South Stand, the East Stand? Is it the strangely named sponsored stand?
Just the continuation of the stand I'm in.
Yeah, this is clear. You're in the shittest stand.
Makes it easy when you're drunk. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and there's nice... At the back of the stand as well, the girders are low enough so you can hold them and support yourself, which is nice.
That's pretty much the case at the top of the East Stand. I wonder if they've ever repaired that rust that I spotted up there in the Spurs replay.
You can tell we haven't been playing very well, can't you? Because we're getting sidetracked with all this chit chat.
That rust has always fascinated me. Don't pretend it isn't interesting.
It segues nicely into the Ipswich match. Another poor performance.
Rust.
Yet they were poorer than us.
That was a great 3-1 win. Vintage.
We put them to the sword.
It was never in doubt, that result.
This red card had that extra frisson of him just recently having finished a loan. It was good. You could tell when our players ran in to say, he's unballed it, that there seemed to be a moment of, we kind of like him. Nobody was going to be waving imaginary red cards at him, but it was more...
He had a little chuckle to himself in the tunnel.
Go on, fuck off.
And the way he just fell on his back.
So it was somewhat
realize what he'd done.
Unique, because normally when a keeper handles it outside the box, they've been tending to go for it with something else and it hits their hand, or they're just sort of sliding across the ground. But this had it was going over him and he caught it, and you could see his head kind of drop as he was in the air still. There's Shit. It's in my hands, and I'm in the... He couldn't even sort of throw it out and pretend it was in his box.
It was Sonko's fault. He did it to prevent a goal, didn't he?
It was going over his head, and it was...
Sonko just did a mental back header, and the only thing he could do to stop a goal was to save him. Sonko, I think... You'd think Bates had paid him off, except we know how much he pays our players.
Sounds like a foreign beer, does Sonko?
I love it. Well, he played as if he was drunk, Dan. Did you see?
And that was a bad head...
moving on.
His pass to Snodgrass was fantastic.
Oh, it was amazing.
It's the magnetism of the man that footballers, even from opposition teams, they just look at him and must give ball to Snodgrass. And
it took me three replays to realise it was him that had done it, because I presumed it was one of our players because it was perfectly weighted. It was better than most passes that he gets.
The commentary from Eddie Gray on this is... I actually recorded it and put it out on the internet. It's worth listening to because I've never heard Eddie Gray laugh so much. Well, he was obviously watching a replay. Look at him! Look at him! And then he just stopped. He must have just thrown up his hands and laughed. And that's how bad Ipswich's defence was.
The only thing I could liken it to was the 6-4 Preston game where one of their players kind of battled to keep it in and headed it across to Bruce. It was a kind of going that extra mile to make it easy. I mean, our defence, it gifts things, but not generally like this. This was brilliant.
And then the next goal. It was every time the ball went into the gap between their goalkeeper and the back four, they just started running in zigzags in away from each other.
It's the sort of game that proves Charles Reap correct with his get it in the mixer.
It was Sonko again. So he got three assists. What did he do on that one?
He let it bounce on this one. But wasn't it someone else who made the final error?
It was somebody else for Becchio's goal.
Oh, of course it was.
That was Thomas Jefferson Smith. His middle name is Jefferson, which I thought was good. At least he's got a little bit of presidential pride. But yeah, that was just a hoof from Lonergan, and then Becchio, as he did in the old days, bullied a bit of a defender out of the way, and then...
Good finish, tight angle.
Beckford at Old Trafford-esque.
Very much so.
Not quite the same style of celebration.
Sexier.
Yeah.
Some have said...
Almost too brief. I would have liked to know where he was going with that celebration, because he started off doing a kind of a sexy sort of limp-wristed dance and then just gave it up for straight-out pelvic thrusts, and then the rest of his teammates appeared. I'd like to know what was coming next.
Some kind of dirty protest.
Well, that's 7 points from 9 then in the league this year. Are we getting a bit better?
Promotion form. It totally overlooks the fact that we've been... terrible in all the games, and people keep getting sent
lots
off.
Lots of red cards are helping.
A better than even chance.
And also, it's worth mentioning the Burnley goals as well, which are in this same period. So we beat Burnley with two ridiculous goals, beat Ipswich with three ridiculous goals. Yeah. So we scored one decent goal in these three games.
The Leeds United circus is proving better than the football team.
But we're ninth and 1 point off Birmingham in sixth. It's not too bad.
I think the only problem is, and we'll probably talk about this when we preview the game, is that we've all got that feeling that although we're only 1 point from Birmingham, they're a lot better than us.
And so are a lot of other teams as well.
The table may not lie. I think it's telling fibs at the moment.
Right, in this bit, we talk about ins and outs. There's been one significant out. Can anybody guess who that may be?
Bates.
Johnny Howson.
Ben Parker.
Johnny, he's gone missing again, this time all the way to East Anglia. Bye-bye, Johnny. $2 million in the bank.
Johnny's reunited with Johnson down there in Norwich. Who would have thought when we were battling out with Norwich at the top of League One that a couple of years later they'd be in the Premier League with our team?
Paul Lambert seems to be wanting to acquire everything from us because he put a bid in for Snoddy in the summer, didn't he?
Yeah, he'll be sniffing around Clayton next.
So what, gents, are your thoughts on this departure? Another sad occurrence to add to a list of sad occurrences in recent years?
Well, let's not pretend we all thought it was brilliant, because he got a lot of stick on this podcast and from other people. I think the reason people are upset is what it represents, which is essentially we're not really a football team anymore. Because whatever we thought of him, Grayson thought an awful lot of him because he played him every game. He was his captain. He has done for 3 years, and we've just got rid of him because we're not going up and we can't pay him enough and there's no point.
Part of Ken's justification for it, he says, is when he just says, furthermore, he hurt his leg against Millwall, so... It's kind of like, he hurt his leg, so we're selling him. The whole thing just seems really avoidable. If we had a decent sort of ambitious wage structure at the club and actually paid money into the football side of things, we could afford to tempt somebody, well, to at least convince somebody not to go to Norwich.
your captain, a Leeds-born lad who's been there since he was 9, 10?
Seven.
Any advance on seven?
I think it was seven, he said. Now, it's what it represents, isn't it? It's the fact that it's us conceding, essentially, that we are not going to go up, and Housen's just basically held up a big placard saying, look, everyone, we're not going to go up. This is an admission. We're not going to go up.
Also, our central midfield has been bad enough this year without... We've seen the midfield without Housen in it. We don't have any better options.
And that's it. We've given him stick, but part of the stick we've given him is the understanding that he's 23 years old and sort of like he's going to be around long enough that we can tease him constantly because he wasn't going to go anywhere. So it felt like there was no risk involved in teasing Johnny Housen. And at some point, if he has a 27, 28, he could turn out to be a really, really good player and just get the consistency and do all the time the things that we've seen him do sometimes and be good. But he's going to get to the Premier League before we are. So for all the times we've ever laughed at his going missing routines and his little Johnny Wanniness, he's gone. We're still here.
He was our little Johnny Wanny.
He was our little Johnny Wanny.
And you look to like the example of Bradley Johnson, who we all said he's not a Premier League footballer, but you know he's making a decent fist of it, isn't he?
It's on the fringes of the England squad.
Well, you know, but it goes to show that perhaps we're not the greatest judges of footballers, because obviously football managers see better things and greater qualities in these players.
I think it shows that a lot of it is down to profile, that if you're decent and can get into the Premier League, you suddenly, your profile just goes oomph, and headbutting Joey Barton doesn't do you any harm. But people just notice you and they become aware of you, whereas if you're just toiling away in a mid-table second division club, so it doesn't matter how good you are, you're not going to get picked for England and you're not going to get interviewed on Sky Sports all the time and all the hot and cold running women that East Anglia has to offer. If that's what Johnny's after. I mean, he's a married man with a kid, maybe that's what he's... But you know what I mean? There is just, if you're a footballer and you want to be in the Premier League, I think there is a big gulf in attention, not necessarily a massive gulf in ability required to play there, which makes it so much more annoying that we let these two players go.
And we let Johnson go on the basis as well, that we would be getting someone better. And instead, we got Michael Brown, and we've let Housen go on the basis that the money will be reinvested, and it won't be.
Well, we don't know for sure, do we? But there's little faith at the minute that that's the case.
Ken has actually, today, in the programme on Saturday and today, he's tried to, I think this is his attempt at transparency by telling us how little he spends on the football team. And it kind of backfires because he mentioned on Saturday that Grayson had overspent. We gave him £9 million budget and we've overspent by £2 million. He says that just goes to show that we're backing him. And Eddie Gray, after the game, was saying how he was amazed that we were spending so much money. He said, I think that's high. And he'd obviously not looked at the wage bill of any other club in the division. He'd be like, that seems high. Do you not think that's high?
I gave him one sheet of toilet paper and he came back and asked for another.
And then he's clarified it today that it's not the wage bill, it's all the money.
It's the pot, isn't it?
It's the pot. It's transfers, agents' fees, wages. £9.5 million, and we expected to get promotion on £9.5 million. We've got a turnover of £30 million, and all we can spare for the football team is a measly £9.5 million. Of course it's not going to bloody work, and of course the players aren't being paid as much as Norwich and Bristol and St Etienne can pay them, so of course they're not going to stay. Oh, and the bloody Gradle money, while we're on a brief Bates hobby horse, due to exchange rates, we've lost 6% of the Gradle fee, because he presumably hadn't noticed that we were going to be paid in French francs, and well, French in French francs circa 1968.
We would lose money then.
Euros, as they're known now.
The French euro?
And in French euros. And he hasn't bothered to tie that down to an actual pounds and pence amount.
Imagine Harvey taking it to one of those rip-off places in the airport. Get a big case of money and go, just put this into pounds, would you?
Well, that's not as much as I thought was there. Because it's like lira used to be, when you've got thousands and thousands of pounds of lira in notes, and it turns out, it's only a couple of quid. Oh, suppose we can get a beer at the airport, can't we? And that'll be all right. Yeah, I think it works out at about I can't remember if it was £30,000 or £60,000, but that's, we've lost just on the Gradle deal.
Coming off your salary, is that, Sean? That's what I'd say to him.
Well, it won't, though. It'll come out of Simon's pot and make Simon's pot even more tinny and hollow than it sounded already.
I did see it suggested on forum today as well that maybe Bates asked him what colour carpets he preferred in the in the new boxes and then went, right, let's come in on your budget.
So Johnny's gone. No one's really happy. Protests have resumed. However, whilst all this was going on, Fabian Delph has returned on loan for a full month, but wants to stay for longer, which is good news.
Yeah, Villa don't want him to stay for longer, do they? Because he's been in their first team. I think they just want to keep him playing. And if
they quite like him, and they'd like him to keep playing for them.
Is that why they bought him?
Do you think?
From us?
Yeah. Possibly.
Yeah, he's like a new signing, though. I've got to say that for him. And maybe if we offered Aston Villa the East Stand, if we just said you can have all these executive boxes and swap them for Delph, like we did. I was quite excited by Delph coming back because I thought a midfield of Delph, Clayton and Housen, stick Housen in his platini role and everything's going to be great.
And Townsend, of course.
Townsend on the wing, Snodgrass on the other wing. If there's an upper limit to the number of good players that were actually allowed at a time. Like, if you want another toy, you're going to have to give one of them away. Football's supposed to be fun, and I want all my toys now. Especially if they're only coming on loan. It's not like we can even keep him.
Speaking of Villa loanees, Eric Lehigh...
And he's ours anyway.
Eric Lehigh rumours have resurfaced.
He's theirs. Well, he's America's.
All very much dependent sort of on Villa's right-back cover, his recovery from injury. Connolly's not coming back, is he?
Blown it.
Doesn't look like it.
Oh, well.
Him and his little Scouse entourage with Billy Painter. They can both go.
We'll all go to Tranmere, catch up with Robbo.
So, yeah, would we like to see him back, assuming he can actually run now still?
His recovery does seem to be taking a long time. He's been saying basically since the summer that once he's fit, being for Lehigh.
Was that a hip injury?
It's pretty cool.
No,
I don't know, just a general body blow. If he's playing fullback for Leeds, he may have had a Parker-style breakdown.
And against the backdrop of these ins and outs, Robert Snodgrass's contract is quietly ticking away down to a year and a half. Apparently, Simon Grayson states that we offered him a contract... Well, we say improvement, we don't know for sure, but we offered him a contract as a courtesy after receiving a bid from Norwich in the summer.
Idiots. Apparently he's not even our highest paid player and we haven't even offered. Well, this is where it gets into the rumour territory, but the report that this Duncan Castles fellow, if I always think if a journalist puts their name to it, there at least there's got to be something there, otherwise they wouldn't be willing to be...
Drip-fed information by the club.
Yeah, but the information that he appears that he was... fed is that we didn't even offer to make him our highest paid player. And why would you invite, right, we'll sort Snoddy's contract out today. Oh yeah, what are we giving him? Yeah, not much. And then when
what does Zach Thompson earn? Stick 20 quid a week on top.
When he marches out,
so he can
out,
use the gym when he wants.
When he marches out in disgust, it's like, well, surprised that didn't go better. just increase the size of Simon's pot, decrease the size of the executive box pot, give it all to Robert Snodgrass, close down the rest of the club, I don't care. I'll just go and watch Snoddy all the time. But yeah, what we've written at the end here, tick, tock, tick, tock.
Indeed, and Adam Clayton, rumours of bids...
Tick,
rumours of bids from Bolton, but he's made it clear he wants to stay, despite his allegedly meagre wages.
Yeah, made it clear he wants to stay... But for me, my future's at Leeds United for the minute and hopefully for the foreseeable future.
Gosh.
So we've got a minute in the foreseeable future.
That's a real commitment.
Jesus.
Anyway, Alex Bruce could be chucking up all the way over the pond with LA Galaxy, vomiting on David Beckham, maybe.
You wouldn't want to fly with him all the way out there.
Would we be bothered? Do we want him to go?
I think it'd be hilarious. I look forward to watching him struggle in the...
It's a bit better than Huddersfield.
It'd be kind of the reverse of my California man plot from the last podcast. Coming the other way then, the Robbie Rogers has now got his work permit sorted. He's allowed to work here.
Well, not quite.
International clearance and visa and red tape. Oh, is there still some more red tape?
Yeah, and then he's got to go on the Krypton factor. He's got to complete that. He's got to not get trapped in the crystal maze. I believe there's also an IQ test required, and then he may finally be able to make his debut.
It's going to be so underwhelming, isn't it? Alex Cairns signed a two-year contract.
He might be good. We don't know. But he's signed off on Twitter, so he's definitely... That means he might be coming.
Alex Cairns, 19-year-old keeper, signed a two-year contract.
Better than wrong.
Yeah.
That's all we know of him so far.
Well, it's like a new signing.
Well done. Next. Right, Will Hatfield, 20 years old, midfielder. He's been allowed to leave, come through the youth ranks. Now he's buzzed off on loan to Halifax Town. Well, FC Halifax Town.
It's not a loan.
He's gone.
This is
gone.
Forever.
I didn't mean loan. I meant for good.
Yeah,
I'm just so used to hearing the word loan.
Well, good luck to him, and good luck to Halifax. I quite like Halifax.
Neil Aspin as manager, the Skull. That's all right. And he came on as a sub for them in a game that I don't know if they won, lost or draw. Will Hatfield.
Ben Parker spotted alive somewhere near the M6. Rumours of.
They'd have to close the you make it sound like a deer's gone loose on the motorway. They've closed both carriageways due to an animal.
A loose Ben Parker. All this because he is supposed to be in the throes of a loan to Carlisle. Poor soul.
And it was hastily arranged after his clanger that was dropped in the pavilion.
Well, it wasn't a clanger.
Where
was
he got
it?
On the mic and went, Johnny doesn't want to leave! Get off me!
I'm mad as hell and I won't take it anymore. Yeah, I think the deal depends on whether the NHS in Cumbria can actually afford to have him in the county.
What booper? Do they have a booper in Cumbria?
I think Mountain Rescue have said no. Their helicopters can't handle being called out all the time.
Somebody who's been on trial, Matty Pattison. Somebody talked to me about Mr. Pattison.
I'd forgotten about Matty Pattison until we were linked with him, and I looked him up and discovered. I remembered the story, but I didn't remember the name. About
you see, you forgot that face.
About the Norwich player that drove drunk to training in just his pants.
And now he's coming here. And my favourite part of the way that story is written is where it says Matty Pattison, whose nickname at the club is Party.
Oh, God.
So that'll go well. Yeah, and he's been
drunk
to...
Drunk driver, you say?
There's no excuse for being a morning after drunk drive footballer in just his pants.
I don't think this
pants,
was so much as morning after, though. I think, given he was driving to training on a Sunday when he didn't have training, I think he'd very recently come in from a nightclub.
He's a drunk driver. Well, him and Delph will have something to talk about, at least.
Share stories in the heart of the midfield, can't they?
Share a taxi.
That would be the responsible thing to do, and put some trousers on for crying out loud. Yeah, he's coming from his last club's Mamelodi Sundowns, which is where we got Phil Masinga from. Phil Masinga was a more handsome man. Just get a look at Matty at Party Patterson's face and just see what we've got to look forward to if he signs.
Well, we have played that behind closed doors friendly versus Celtic, haven't we? He scored in that game, as did Mr. William Buses All Coming at Once Painter.
National Express to Chesterfield, maybe coming for him. There's a rumour of a loan.
Indeed. Rumours continue to be very prevalent.
The rumour of a goal is hard enough to believe, but the rumour of a loan would be too much.
Was it tapping, wasn't it?
Oh, I can't imagine. Apparently, nobody who witnessed it has yet recovered their sight. They can't describe what has been seen can never be unseen.
Regarding rumours, Sammy Klingon and Richie Wellens both rumoured to be coming in central midfield also. Be interested to see how that one plays out. I mean, Klingon, we've been talking about this for ages. Wellens, did he play in the playoff final?
I've got a memory. I meant to check. I've got memories of him being great for Doncaster. It may not have been the playoff final.
We did make them look a little bit like Brazil on that day, didn't we?
Yeah. And I mean,
Jason Price looked quite good on that day.
Who would have thought that a team with Sammy Klingon and Gary McSheffrey wouldn't be climbing the I'd almost said the charts, but they call them league tables in football, don't they? Climbing the hit parade.
Generally, yeah. And he's not well liked, is he, at Coventry?
Gary McSheffrey? No, he's
not liked anywhere.
They love a wanker down there.
Klingon.
No, I don't think so. Maybe they just resent him. Hopefully they resent him because he's good.
Well, protests have resumed off the pitch. I don't know why people are moaning, because we've now got a second Category C game this season. So what's wrong with people?
Brighton at home. And it's a Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff, so it's actually almost like getting close to being reasonable football.
You almost wonder why they've made it Category C when it's...
We've had
midweek games against crap teams that have been Category A, and then all of a sudden a Saturday when it might have been an all right crowd anyway. It's almost as if...
Not with those protests, it won't be.
Almost as if the club are panicking.
Well, there's never been any logic to the categories.
No.
Trying to ask... I think asking for a logical approach to the category system would be too much.
Think it's something to do with the policing bills.
You think?
Yep, it is. And I think some categories are...
They're a rough lot from Brighton, though.
Possibly linked to our categories, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. It's the police bills and the scale of policing.
Brighton, they can be a rowdy-do.
And finally, as we just said, the protests have resumed at Elland Road in the wake of House and Sale. Seem to be gathering momentum, and Leeds United Supporters Trust today put out that statement outlining a positive vision for the future, really, which is something I think we
Which is more than we do. But no, get behind it. Make sense.
We just handed out a load of masks of Ken Bates's face and said, get on, make a positive future out of that. No, it's been a hectic week. sit-down protests outside the East End development on the day, I think, Ken declared it officially open. You mentioned it, like the whole thing is now finally done. And the first thing that happens is we sell Halston and go and sort of occupy the car park immediately outside. And then the trust has got itself up and running. It's trying to sort of take the energy of the protests and try to use it for something actually good.
The Square Ball Podcast, supported by thegeldedend.com.
Part three now of the Square Ball Podcast, and I am delighted to say we are joined on the telephone now by the Leeds United reporter from the Yorkshire Evening Post. That's Phil Hay. You all right, Phil?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. Good evening, gentlemen.
Yes, thank you for joining us on the podcast. Questions then. Right, what do you make of this Johnny Howson sale?
It's funny. Over the last 5.5 years and doing this job, there's been plenty of controversial moments and plenty of incidents that have kind of whipped up the eye of the fans, but it's difficult to remember something that seemed to exercise people as much as this. I mean, time kind of dulls your memory slightly, and I'm sure 2007, the summer of the insolvency, must have been every bit as bad, if not worse. But it's quite rare to see a reaction like this. And I mean, it's for me, it's on the outside of the club, you'd probably see it in the context of Leeds United selling their captain, and clearly that's significant and doesn't look good. But I think that there's a wider issue here, and really it's the fact that it's another player who's reached the back end of his contract, another player who's reached a position contractually where the club either feel obliged to sell him or resign themselves to lose him on a free transfer. It's not the first time it's happened. I don't think it's going to be the last either, to look at other players who are in the squad at the moment. There were two sides to it, really. I don't think the club had a lot of option but to take the offer. As far as I could understand, I don't think Johnny was intended to take up a contract if the club hadn't been promoted. And you'd say that £2 million for a player, or whatever the fee is, it's obviously undisclosed, for a player in that position is good money, given that he will be out of contract. But as I say, the other side to it is that in terms of team building and squad building, it doesn't help when players of that standard are moving on as regularly as they seem to do. And, you know, I'm sad to see Johnny go. I know he was criticised a lot. I know not everybody thought highly of him, but I had a very high opinion of him. I thought he was a very gifted footballer. I thought he was a terrific lad and actually a really good captain as well, a good ambassador for the club. And you know, playing for Leeds obviously meant a lot to him. It was never a question of whether it mattered. And I think you need people like that at the club. And it's a shame to see him go.
Can you understand the fans' anger and ire? Do you think it's justified?
I think it is. As I say, I don't think this is specifically about Howson. A lot of people will be sad to see him go because he is a good player and a very good player at that. You know, clearly good enough for the Championship and, you know, by Paul Lambert's judgment, possibly good enough for the Premier League as well. I always thought that with better players around him, he would cope fine in the Premier League. But I think it's the fact that again, you're seeing another player, a good player, leave. We've seen it with Max Gradle, Jermaine Beckford, Bradley Johnson, Neil Kilkenny, and to some extent, Kasper Schmeichel, although I think Grayson was as happy to look for a new keeper as Leeds were to sell Schmeichel last summer. But it has happened before, and again, as I say, you look for strong team building over a concerted period of time. You look for deals that give the manager a bit of stability that mean that the squad he's got is not massively changed season to season. And, you know, as I say, it's not the first time this has happened. And from speaking to the supporters I know and the people I saw around Elland Road on Saturday, it wasn't so much the fact that it was Howson that was frustrating people. It was the fact that they were looking at this and thinking, here we go again. It's another good player who is leaving with his contract running down, another good player that the club haven't been able to tie down. And I really do understand the frustration. I do.
Phil, did you get any indication that there was any prospect of Howson signing a contract in the last point of the last 2 years? Because one thing that occurred to me is why they couldn't give him a contract that would run beyond this summer, but with a get-out clause. So if a bid came in for him from a Premier League club, he still had the option to go, and we still had the option of getting money, but we could keep him for the whole of this season without this business of basically always having to let players go 3 or 4 months early just in case something happens in the summer that means we don't get a fee. Has there been any sign of a way out of that?
Not especially. I mean, I would say going back to September, October time, around the time when we knew that Johnny had a new contract offered to him, it became quite clear pretty quickly that he was having doubts and was a little reluctant to tie himself down. I think if he was being brutally honest, he would say that he wanted to play in the Premier League and wasn't 100% convinced, and I can understand this, that the Leeds were going to get there this season. I honestly don't think that he would have expected a bid to come in for him now. I think he would have expected to have made this decision in the summer, especially given that he's injured. I'm not sure that even Leeds would have anticipated a bid of that size. But my understanding was that had Leeds not gone up this season, it was highly likely he would have gone in the summer. As you say, I mean, it's always spoken about, really, when these situations come round, some sort of deal that has clauses or pay related.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To which division the club are in, and like you say, get out clauses that presumably would allow that to happen. But from his point of view, I mean, had he not been expecting a bid to come in for him this month, it's obviously easier for him to move on a free transfer in the summer than it is to look for a club to bid for him if there is a get out clause in his contract. And I don't doubt that deep down he did want to stay, but I think he was looking at this from a professional point of view rather than a personal point of view. I think he does want to advance his career, and as I say, not necessarily convinced that he can do that quickly in the short term with Leeds. But as I say, there is another side to this, which is the fact that his contract has run down, and also that you know, a player like that, a homegrown player who the club does matter to, who, you know, does have a very, very high opinion of Leeds United, is having doubts about where the club are going and whether that's in the short term or the long term. I think when someone like Housen starts giving those signals, you need to be a bit worried.
I was going to say the worrying thing about all that is he's not the only player with professional ambitions at the club. And if they've all got the same worry, we're a bit screwed.
Yeah, well, that's what a lot of people have been saying over the last week. And I think that is probably the noise or the concern that the club must listen to, really, is that if there are doubts within the squad, then that is a problem. And, you know, as things stand, for example, with Robert Snodgrass, I know there's a lot of talk about Ross McCormack's contract with Adam Clayton's, about Aidan White, but without any question, with Housen gone, the valuable player in the squad is Robert Snodgrass. And, you know, he's 18 months away from the end of his contract, which I think we can safely assume means he won't be sold this month. I have to be honest, I don't think the club would dare sell him this month after the reaction to the Housen sale. And, but also, I think they would look at him and say if they are going to do anything in the second half of the season, he is the sort of player who has to stay. I mean, you know, if Housen had been injured until March, if he'd only been able to play 10, 12 games, then you can't debate how much input he would have had. But with regards to Snodgrass, you know, in 6 months' time, we're going to be in the same position as we were with Max Gradel this time last year. And I honestly don't think that the club could promise at the moment that Snodgrass will be here at the start of next season. Unless they're promoted, really. And in a way, that's almost been the catchphrase for the season. If they're promoted, you would assume that there is a very, very good chance of Snodgrass staying. If they aren't, then you really have to wonder if he, like other players before him, is going to say, look, I'm 24, 25, I'm an international, I've got a lot of prospects down here, and the time's right to move on. And I have to be honest, a player as good as that, you couldn't blame him if he took that attitude.
You interviewed Sean Harvey last year.
Yes.
He told you about the club's strategy would see them promoted.
Yes.
Do you think it's realistic then or now?
I think they've got a chance this year. My argument, and I've been saying since the start of the season that I didn't think the squad was strong enough. I didn't think that the first team was necessarily strong enough either to give them anything better than a chance of promotion. I think in this division, you always have a chance, or at least the majority of clubs will have a chance insofar as that the division is very, very even. And I do think there are a lot of, some might say ordinary sides out there, but sides who essentially are evenly matched. And I think if you don't have a half shout of sixth place, then you have to say you're not a great team in the Championship at the moment. But my argument was that the dealing that went on in the summer and the transfers that were made, the signings that went begging, meant that the squad wasn't exceptional, and it meant that they didn't have an exceptional chance of getting promoted. They did have a chance, and they still do have a chance. I mean, they've hung in somehow over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and you know, right on the edge of the playoffs again. And I can't say I'm optimistic, but at the same time, you have to say that they are in there, and you know, a lot of other sides round about them who have watched everybody so far this season. I'm not remarkable in any way, but as I say, that was my concern during the summer, was that yeah, the strategy might work and they do have a chance. But I don't think that the way things were being done and the signings that were being made were giving them a really outstanding chance, or were putting them in the bracket of the top 2 or 3 clubs in the division. They're in amongst a huge number who do have a chance of sixth, but you couldn't say on the basis of the performances this season, or on the basis of the squad, that they're any better than that.
Why do you think the side's so inconsistent?
I honestly can't explain that. I think to some extent that they've lost key players who were fairly essential last season. Again, a bit like Johnny Howson. I know Bradley Johnson took a lot of abuse and wasn't necessarily rated by everybody, but he had a great engine on him and really strong physical player, someone who could work for 90 minutes quite easily. And I think they've missed him and Kilkenny in the centre of midfield. I think as much as anything in the centre of midfield, they've missed a reliable and established partnership there, really, and that's what they had last season. And I do think they've missed Max Gradle as well, and an awful lot was made of the fact that Danny Pugh coming in would make them more solid and would perhaps limit the number of goals they were conceding. But ultimately, with Gradle, you're talking about someone who'd scored 18 goals last season and who, you know, I felt over the course of the season, he was a player of the year, and I thought that was absolutely justified. I thought he was the best Leeds United player last season by a distance, but you know, I thought he clearly stood out, and that to me was a very, very big loss, especially because he wasn't replaced immediately by a like-for-like player. So I think they're not the attacking force they were. I don't think there's the same level of understanding that there was back when, you know, the front five were Johnson, Kilkenny, Howson, front six, sorry, Johnson, Kilkenny, Howson, Snodgrass, Gradle and Becchio. I think that was a really fluid unit with real understanding of each other. And admittedly, the defence struggled desperately last year and hasn't been perfect this year. But I think they've just lost a little bit of their sharpness and a little bit of their edge going forward. And that is kind of telling, because I have to say, it's an awful long time since I can last think of a well-created Leeds goal. You'd probably be going back to either the Millwall game or the Forest game, I think. It's been a bit of a scramble since then. And that does seem to be having an effect.
Do you think, carrying on from that Grayson, he's been there a long time now, do you think he's going to last a much longer time?
I think he'd probably accept himself that he certainly needs to get the club into the playoffs this season. You never know with Leeds quite what they're thinking inside their own walls and what the target for him is or what the minimum requirement for Grayson is. I would have thought the playoffs at the very least. There've been a lot of noises this season about, you know, that how much they do want to win promotion. Although, as I was saying earlier with the squad, I think when you look at the squad and compare it to others in the division, I'm not sure they can really mark promotion down as an absolute necessity or something they should be earning this season. They should be in with a chance, but I don't think they're better than that necessarily. But like you say with Grayson, he's been here for 3 years now. This is very much his team and his players, or at least the players that he's signed. I think a playoff position is essential. If they don't finish in the playoffs, I think questions will be asked of his job. Whether they'll be asked by the club, I don't know, but they'll certainly be asked by us, and that's absolutely inevitable because that's the way football is, really. And I have to say, I'd feel sorry about that because he's got a very, very good record there, and I think it's quite easy to underestimate the pressure involved in that job. I've seen 4 or 5 people do it, and I would say that give or take, you know, odd periods of pressure, I think he's probably handled it as well as anybody. And you're under constant scrutiny, you're always in the spotlight. He lives locally, obviously, so there's a lot of pressure in that respect as well, and a lot of interest in him. And I do think, you know, to survive 3 years in the job is quite an achievement, really. And as I say, they're still on the fringes of the playoffs, but what I've seen the last two and a half months, I think they're going to need a real surge through the last 3 months to stay in there and to finish sixth.
In terms of trying to achieve that, do you think the next week until the close of the transfer deadline is probably one of the most important weeks in a long time for Leeds?
Absolutely. I actually felt the same about January last year, and I don't think I was alone in feeling a little disappointed about what was done towards the end of the window. And we saw Simon at Thorpe Arts last week, and obviously the sale of Housen was kind of key in the topics of conversation. Also Fabian Delph coming in, but I did ask Simon, I'd say to him, it looks essential now that you have a strong finish to the transfer window. You know, from the point of view of the supporters, who many of whom I speak to seem disillusioned and you know, pretty downhearted about the way things are going. And as I said, I think the squad needs to be stronger. I certainly think that the first team needs to be stronger. I would like to see, assuming that Paul Connolly is not going to have a look in, which I think over the last few games it seemed likely that he won't do. I think they need a right back. No disrespect at all to Zach Thompson, but I think it's a big ask for him to see out the season in that position. And I still think, even with Delph coming in, that another central midfielder is needed. It would help enormously to have a partnership there that is picking itself. And I've been impressed with Adam Clayton in patches this season, not so impressed in others. And little periods where you would have liked to have had somebody else available you could have thrown in and given the chance to really, you know, really tie a position down, as they say. And a lot of talk about Keith Andrews. I know he is a player that the club have looked at, and it looks like he's trying to get out of his contract at Blackburn at the moment. I think that would not be a bad shout at all, assuming he's fit and in shape. Somebody of that ilk, just to, like I say, to find a settled partnership in there, because it really is needed.
In terms of trying to achieve the club's strategy then, do you think something needs to change? Because we've seen the Supporters Trust have released their statement today outlining their vision for this campaign for change. Do you think that something needs to change on a basic level at Leeds in order to pull everyone together and get the club up into the Premier League?
I don't think you can go forward indefinitely with the support as disillusioned as they are at the moment. I mean, I'm always wary of assuming that a protest applies to everybody and that every single Leeds United supporter is alienated or unhappy. But it's pretty clear from the protest, but also from the statement from the Trust and, you know, the general atmosphere inside Elland Road particularly, that people aren't especially happy with the direction of the club. And I think it would be to the club's benefit, it would certainly help the supporters if there was a bit of a reaching out to them and a bit of an appreciation of some of what they're arguing. I mean, certain demands from supporters are unrealistic. Some people, you know, make demands that don't really appreciate the way a club has to be run. But from what I listen to the supporters saying about the strength of the squad, the investment in the squad, you know, the sort of attention to the playing side, I appreciate what they're saying, and I don't think much of what they're saying is wrong. As I say, I have concerns about the strength of the team and the squad myself, and I do think the club need to listen to that. I think they need to understand that there is a lot of, well, I don't know whether I'd call it a majority, but there is a large section of the support at the moment who are not convinced by the club's direction and I'm not happy with it at all. And, you know, the crowds have definitely dropped this season. There's no doubt at all about that. It might be in part related to the financial situation that everybody is in, the economy. But I think as well, games at Elland Road at the moment are not the events they were a year ago. And the atmosphere seems poor to me. It's very on edge. People it's not getting into the occasion as much as they were. And, you know, the club quite simply can't afford to lose ticket sales en masse. They can't afford for the crowds to go down. They need to keep people involved and they need to keep people coming through the gates. And the way to do that is to have a good team that people want to watch and to have a happy support who want to be there week in, week out. And who are turning up, not out of habit or because they feel they should, but are turning up because they want to be there.
Do you think they need to open a dialogue with the fans or a better dialogue?
I certainly think it would help. I mean, it's been an awful long time since, you know, the last time there were any serious discussions that I'm aware of between the supporters club and the club. I mean, as far as I can understand, I don't think that relationship is ever going to improve. But the Trust seem to be growing in numbers. I mean, they're starting to get up to a decent four-figure membership and member base. And, you know, that doesn't give them the credibility to speak for every single supporter, but it gives them the credibility to speak to, you know, for a large number. They've also got Nigel Martin on board, who I think is the perfect figurehead really for them. He's somebody with no axe to grind with anybody, somebody with a pretty squeaky clean reputation and well respected, one of the few players really who doesn't seem to divide opinion at all. I think a Leeds United fan who'd have a bad thing to say about him. So the opportunity is there, and I think, you know, this time of all times, it would seem opportune moment to do it, really, because there is unrest and people do seem unhappy. And I mean, Simon Grayson said over the weekend, if we start winning games, then you know the atmosphere will improve. And I do agree with that to an extent, but I think there are other issues at play here, and you know other things that are concerning people. It isn't purely the results. It isn't purely the squad. It's issues such as you know the ticket prices, which have been there for a long time. It's you know things that are to do with the club, but not necessarily to do with the team. And I think the club do need to accept that. I'm sure they are appreciative and they understand what is being said. But I think there is a need now for them to react to it.
As personally and as a paper, how difficult a position are you in as regards covering Leeds? Because obviously you see the BBC banned, the Guardian banned. I mean, how fine a line do you feel you're treading?
Not massively, to be honest. I mean, it's a bit of a misconception that if you write anything negative, you get banned. It isn't really like that. Although, I mean, as a paper, we have been banned in the past, and others clearly are at the moment. But that said, you have to be careful, and you have to get your stories right. You have to get your stories accurate. But as far as the protest goes, as far as you know, things like the sale of Johnny Housing goes, no concern at all about getting involved in that and covering it as we did. I mean, a couple of very very critical columns last week, particularly from Don Matteo, who was saying, you know, it spoke of a lack of ambition, really, or the concern that your captain is going. And I mean, it's like everything. We have to be as fair as we can, and we have to be. To be fair to the club as much as we are fair to the views of the supporters. Some people will think we get that wrong. Some people would like us to go further than we do. I totally understand that, but we genuinely do our best. And you know, as far as not covering things that might cause trouble with the club, it's never been like that.
In the final part of the Square Ball podcast, we will look at the games that are coming up, and these ones straddling the border of January and February. We've got Birmingham City at home on the final day of the month, Tuesday the 31st of January, transfer deadline day. Dun, dun, dun.
Can we have a football match on when we could watch that on the telly? Isn't it a clash? Gotcha. You can't have football on when there's transfers to be
observed. Well, that's why all those deals fell through at the last minute. We were distracted by I'm just jumping ahead to the...
Hopped in the DeLorean.
This is what Ken's going to be saying because of the Birmingham match. We were hoping to bring some players in around then, but because of the preparations, Grayson wasn't free.
Managers didn't want to let the players go.
Yeah, because they had games on that night as well.
On a day ending in Y.
Yeah, there's nothing really we could have done about it.
See, all through the second half, Ken will be in his new box in the East Stand, signalling at Grayson, I need you to sign this. Can you come over here? He said, no, there's a game on. Hello, come over here and sign this contract.
Where's my P45?
Or Caddickson unplugged the fax machine so they couldn't get anything to the FA.
Power cut in the East End.
Anyway, yeah, so we've got Birmingham.
Yes.
Chance to close the gap, go above them, start heading towards promotion, which is surely ours to lose.
No.
Or plummet down the league.
Could go either way.
You never know, they might have a man sent off. We can hope, can't we? That's what happens, isn't it, nowadays?
It was in about 8 minutes injury time.
Birmingham have a man sent off. I'm going to officially declare things to be getting weird.
I think it's a football league conspiracy to keep Simon Grayson in a job. Because I'm sure when we were losing against Burnley and then again against Ipswich, his papers were all written up. He just needed signing off by someone. And then what happens?
After the Ipswich
Sonko
game.
Sonko happens.
After the Ipswich game, Paul Jewell probably went around and was like, all right, I've done my bit. Just send me those videos later. You're all right.
Dear mate. Midweek game, Category A. Again, we've spoken about it being linked into the potential police bill, and I guess it's going to be fairly substantial for Birmingham, who are known for being a little bit handy, shall we say, historically.
People like Marlon King.
Yeah.
But still, Category A on a Tuesday night doesn't bode well for a full house.
It doesn't.
No. And we're not at £36 a ticket. They won't be bringing many, I wouldn't have thought.
And it doesn't bode well for... It's going to be a small attendance. It's not going to be a game where Leeds are going to dominate. Even if we do win it, it's going to be a snook. Because Birmingham are pretty good. They're unbeaten in eight, won last four, not conceded in three.
But these are the sort of games that we win.
Well, the hope is they've lost seven away. They're good at home. They have lost a few away, but...
I'm just worried that we seem to be playing with no confidence at the moment. We don't even try things.
We could look to our inspirational cap, though.
Just kind of hoofing things up towards Becchio, and that's not particularly working.
Well, that is
no one's willing
captain.
To try anything.
That's our inspirational captain inspiring us. Hoofing it at Becchio every time.
Although, interestingly enough, he said the atmosphere at the ground was affecting some of the players.
He did. We haven't talked about our new captain.
Well, he shouldn't have to worry about this Birmingham match, should we? Because all the atmosphere of blooming Mercury, I think. Pluto, rather.
Do they have particularly different atmospheres in comparison to Welland Road?
I meant one would be cold and distant. The other one would be really close to the sun.
And tonight's second special guest is Professor Brian Cox.
I mean, Zygitch is going to be nearer to those planetary bodies than either of us, because he's very tall, isn't he? Hey,
he's called Nicola as well. We have. He's got a girl's name, hasn't he?
He scored against us. We conceded goals to a girl.
He's shit as well. For being about 9 foot, donkey.
For being about 9 foot tall, he scored with a tapping at Birmingham as well.
Oh, I do get the feeling that Howard Wilkinson sort of sits at home. Maybe gets a tape of every Birmingham game. Goes, oh, what a player.
If I'd have had him.
I knew a girl from Sheffield called Nicola once.
Yeah.
I'm not optimistic about any of these games, you know.
Bristol were going to win.
It's ridiculous. We've got points, haven't we, recently?
Yeah, we're gonna beat Bristol. We'll have a defeat or perhaps a scoring draw with Birmingham. It's the most I'd hope out for. And then we'll go to Bristol and win. Remember last year when Snodgrass danced through their defence and it was beautiful? We'll have more of that. Neil Kilkenny will set him up, Sonko style.
And sadly, we're not having our little romantic trip this year.
No. You had a tiff, you two.
Mm-hmm. Not talking about it on here.
For some reason as well, we've not got many tickets for that.
Do you think it's something to do with the fact that we had loads of drunk fans running at a fence and trying to attack the other fans last year? Or
well, it was if you can't have a bit of fun on a day,
that was wherever Michael goes, whether it's football or not.
Boys will be boys. Come on.
There was no real trouble, though, was there? Bloody hell. Well, I mean, there was a fence and about 1,000 policemen stood in the way.
There was a very retro pre-Taylor report entrance to the away stand at Bristol. It's just one single gangway that's about 8 feet across. And that's got to let all the away fans in.
There's no backs on the seats either.
Yeah, and unsurprisingly, that's where everyone chose to congregate when the home fans, which are right next to the gangway, started getting a bit Murphy-like. Police didn't like it anyway.
Have they come from London?
Started getting a bit Murphy.
That's more like, that's the Bristol I know and love.
What would Sean Dyche think? You need to do some Sean Dyche impressions because it's probably the most popular thing we've ever done.
He's limited. To be perfectly honest, I can't do that voice for very long. It puts me out of action for a week.
You don't hear him speaking between games either, do you? Maybe he keeps his throat as dry as an old riverbed.
I may have under-egged it slightly, actually, having heard him on the Football League show.
So, Neil Kilkenny, let's talk about him. His career's going from strength to strength since he moved down there to the southwest.
They were never going to be that good a team.
I mean, they're a lot better than they were, it's worth saying.
19th.
They were bottom. And the results have picked up because they were quite adrift at one stage. But McInnes has come in and he actually seems to be doing quite a decent job, which is a bit of a shame. Although part of me wants to see them doing well so that Ken can't talk about them at every opportunity.
Big spending Bristol City.
Yeah. Once Leicester and Bristol are ahead of us in the table, it'll have nothing to talk about.
And how much have Bristol spent?
It's about 300 grand, is it? Something like that.
They've bought one player since the end of last season for a fee, £300,000. So unless they're paying, they really are dishing out the gold bars to Neil Kilkenny like nobody's business. I'm gonna stick my neck out and say that they're probably one of the few clubs that aren't necessarily outspending us for fun.
Okay, so two games then. 6 points in the bag, yeah?
I don't know about Bristol, because they should score loads of goals because they got Maynard and Adoma and Pittman, but they don't score many goals because they're crap. So, I don't know. Maynard, they might sell Maynard. So that'll... God, how much do you think if they sell Maynard to Wigan for, like, I don't know, £5 million and Ken gets to hear about that? Hoo-wee! He won't be pleased. And if they spent it on a player...
Bristol's in need of a hotel, though, right near that ground.
But in Bristol, it'll be a boutique... hippie establishment and he's serving vegan food. It would not. Only, Ken went down there and he's greeted by somebody with dreadlocks wearing sandals who basically gives him a Hessian sack to sleep in. I don't think it's going to quite reflect the business plan he has for Elland Road.
That doesn't necessarily answer the question of whether we're going to get 6 points or not from these two games.
It didn't really, did it?
I would gladly take three. I'll settle on three.
I don't think
we'll win either, but I'll take three.
It's all part of the conspiracy to keep Grayson going.
Right, okay, let's move on to the Ken Bates Villain of the Fortnight Award. This award goes to somebody who has contributed to the ongoing misery of being a Leeds United fan. Some nominations for this time. Should be a couple of open goals on this one.
Well, it was Ken.
Ken who?
What's his nomination for this time?
He sold our captain,
I believe. Right, so Ken Bates for selling our captain.
Our captain?
You want to nominate Johnny for leaving?
Not really, I'm just throwing him in.
Okay.
His mum had a... Did she win it once, Johnny Avson's mum?
Yes, she did.
And she poisoned him.
I bet she advised him this time as well.
She can have another go at poisoning him if she likes. Send him more lasagna down there. Yeah, there's quite a few... I mean, there is an angle on Housen that he has left us in the lurch for money and...
Glamour.
And glamour.
In Norwich.
He's always...
And mustard.
Money and mustard. Paul Lambert, just fuck off. Just stop it. There are other players. Other clubs have players for sale. Just fuck off.
Well, my mate, he hated us when we were playing him in League One.
So what do you think's happening now?
He's just spiting us, isn't he? That's the thing. He's not going to play any of these players. He just wants to spite us.
He's speculative bastard.
I don't even think he needs those glasses.
I think
people have sort of seen... Gruff Scotsman, and he's thought, no, I'm a intellectual.
I'm a thinking man Scotsman. Fuck off. I'm sick of him. I've never liked Norwich because Jeremy Goss had... Jeremy Goss and Steve Bruce both had blonde curly hair. Like, who was that kid that went on Wogan in the 80s? Was the antiques dealer? Was it 10-year-old?
Who turned into a tranny?
Yeah. Norwich had always had a team of blokes like him. And just... And now they've got our captain.
I thought we dispensed
with... I'd even have Bradley Johnson back if it meant I could piss Lambert off a bit.
I thought we dispensed with the hate crimes on this podcast, but clearly not.
Well, there's no hate crimes there. These are all it's just hate.
I'd quite like to add a nomination this fortnight and nominate the fake Steve Hodge who appeared on Twitter for being a fake Steve Hodge.
an odd reference.
Yeah, I'm not sure why somebody would devote their time to doing that, but there was an odd Gary Glitter.
You could have a Jeremy Goss account. Start one. Ruin his good name. So it was meant to pass that volley.
Did you see the fake Gary Glitter that appeared on Twitter this week? It was done by somebody as an experiment to see how people reacted. That's a worthwhile experiment, sociologically speaking.
Although it is a surefire way to get your laptop confiscated, I would imagine.
But Steve Hodge is an odd choice.
He wasn't even doing anything particularly interesting with it. He got some people to follow some charities. He's asked a few people their opinion on football. And then Steve Hodge's son apparently rumbled him. And then he was like, you got me. Oh, it wasn't the best
Maybe
idea
it was
you've ever had.
Too obscure that you wouldn't automatically think it was a fake.
We were also provided with information about fake Charlie Austin actually being real Charlie Austin.
Oh, really?
Who then posted some stuff. His girlfriend replied to some of it. He then pretended it had never happened, deleted his account. By which time someone had started another account to parallel it and was reposting the stuff that he had said initially. He deleted his account and said he's been hacked. It was a bit confusing.
This is like the Matrix.
It apparently was him at one stage, but then when it was still on there, that wasn't him.
Right.
Can I nominate West Yorkshire Police as well?
If you like, yeah. All right, Ken.
What have they done to you?
While selling said publication of the Square Ball on Saturday, I was moved because I was causing obstruction whilst... stood on the pavement, whilst, 400 or 500 Leeds fans were congregating around the Billy statue, and I was causing an obstruction.
Maybe they thought they were congregating around you. Did all the girls have, like...
Stop it.
Were they all wearing tartan and screaming? They have little tartan scarves and a lot of...
Is that a Bay City Rollers joke for the younger listeners? Yes. Okay, then, on to the winner. So, nominations, we have Ken Bates for selling Johnny Howson and or his mum for leaving or making him leave, Paul Lambert for stealing Johnny Howson and the rest of our midfield, fake Charlie Austin, or not fake Charlie Austin. Are we going to nominate him this time again just to make up the numbers?
He's not going to win it, but throw him in. Yeah. He might as well be in it.
West Yorkshire Police for having the cheek to move you, Oddie, because you're an obstruction, and fake Steve Hodge for being fake Steve Hodge, or Fodge, as we might call him. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's fine. Silentness.
Fellas, who are your votes for?
Paul Lambert.
Yeah, I feel strongly on Lambert.
I'm going to go with that. He's also won more European Cups than us, which is a bit of a bit of a piss take. You're just Paul Lambert. How are you somehow better than Leeds United?
You're only a person. We're a football club. Yeah, Paul Lambert, well done. Nothing's in the post.
You're not Martin O'Neill. Fuck off.
On to any other business then, gentlemen.
Thomas Brolin, Thomas Brolin used to be as big as a house. It's not anymore. Seen the latest pictures? Big as a street. He's done an interview. I haven't seen the whole interview. I'm not sure if it was a Swedish.
Was it shot in widescreen?
He said, I love this. Firstly, well, I like, there's a Howard Wilkinson-ism in here that I will treasure. because Brolin says he only signed for Leeds because Wilco told him that he would be a spider in the net in the midfield. Go on, Howard. He probably thought, well, I'd better sign just to find out what that means. But Brolin moaned in an interview that he was instead used as a winger. He said, it might not seem so fucking... Which, I mean, foul mouth. I don't approve of this kind of language on our podcast, but as it's Brolin saying it, it's a direct quote. So, children, if you're listening, this is not Moscow White telling you the bad words. This is Thomas Brolin. He said, it might not seem so fucking bad, but a winger in Leeds with the defensive responsibilities I was supposed to have, I was supposed to run up and down the wing like an idiot. Now, having just seen Wilkinson tell him to be a spider in the net in the midfield, I'm not sure that his next instruction would have been, actually, forget being a spider in the net in midfield, just run up and down like an idiot. So I don't believe you, Thomas. But then he says, it wasn't me. Which I think he means rather than in the sort of metaphysical sense that he wasn't actually there. It wasn't really him, like in a
steady
fashion,
on Shaggy,
a fashion sense. It wasn't me. I didn't even think it was fun. So I played as bad as poo. And again, I'm sorry if anybody's offended by Thomas's strong words here, but yes. So because it wasn't fun and it wasn't him, his thing, he played as bad as poo. Which is an interesting new take.
Yeah, we noticed.
And anybody that saw him play will back that up.
I'm going to try and find the full interview, even if it's in foreign. I can stick it through Google Translate and then...
Was there anything more we had? Did we have
We've got Michael, speaking of playing as bad as poo, Michael Dubry had an interesting Saturday.
Oh, he scored a hat-trick, didn't he?
He scored a perfect hat-trick. Oxford versus Hereford, he scored left foot, header and right foot. So he could be, we've just sold Housen. Get Dubry back.
Could we get a couple of million for Dubs?
Play him in the hole. The only problem with it was...
A Dubry and Sonko. Central defence, that's what we dream of.
The only problem with it was the left foot goal was an own goal and the header was an own goal. But to his credit, the right foot one was at a 90th minute equaliser in a 2-2 draw. So if he hadn't gone through all that, admittedly, his team would have won 1-0. So actually there's nothing to praise him for. He saved a draw.
To be fair, he won't have known where that header was going because he didn't... Did he really?
There was the disturbing picture that emerged of him as well, dressed as Princess Leia.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd see that, and I wish I hadn't.
Yeah.
What in particular disturbed you?
The breasts, mainly. I think it was the breasts.
Was it the breasts or the nipples?
I count them as one and the same. No, officer, I never touched her nipples.
Anyway, that's worth looking up, yeah.
You did though, didn't you?
Hey, listen, so issue 6 of the magazine went on sale versus Ipswich. We sold a shed load of them. There's about 250 left, which we will be selling at the Birmingham match. You can buy it online, either digitally or in paper form via thesquareball.net. Remind me, somebody, very quickly, of the brilliant contents contained within...
Ken Bates' mask, the diary... Loads of match reports.
Statistical proof as well that Revy's team was the best team in the world.
There is, and that's actually a really good... I enjoyed that from Steve Firth. He's done some solid research. Ben Fry with a moustache. There's the article about Jock Steen that we've loaned. Just like Leeds United, we get loan articles now from The Blizzard, which is another football magazine. And it's about his Jock Steen's 44 days at Elland Road, which is a very interesting read. There is also an article about Tom Lees by Rich Aspinall, and Michael's finally published his Championship Manager article. That's
confession, his confession, more or less.
That we've managed to persuade him finally.
I'm basically a childish knobhead.
And the Andy Hughes interview as well, which is a right good read. And did we mention the Ken Bates mask?
Yes, indeed we did.
Sven's written about replicas of... apparently he's knocking out replica trophies like nobody's business.
This is the supporters club branch in Scandinavia, isn't it? They donated the FA Cup replica to the club's museum.
They'll raise all the money themselves. They'll get the thing made and then they'll just give it to you. So if your team needs or school needs a trophy, then maybe you could con our Scandinavian supporters branch... out of it, and there's something about Johnny Alston and he's on the cover, and it's that sounds like a lot for £1.50.
I think it jolly well is. So yeah, get that online via thesquareball.net or at Elland Road, and I think that wraps it up for this time. Don't forget to get in touch with us, podcast@thesquareball.net if you want to email us. If you want to get us, you can tweet at the square ball and on Facebook too. That's it, chaps. Should we go
to Norwich?
Yeah. See you later then. Bye from me. Bye from Michael.
Bye-bye.
Moscow White.
Goodbye.
And Oddie.
Bye.
As always, we'll speak to you in a fortnight. Have a good time.
That was a big bye.
Bye.
The Square Ball Podcast, supported by thegeldeden.com.
Oh, this is Sean Dyche. I love to...
Did you just fart? Let's see how his team talks go.
Right, lad. Kick him in the fucking head.
Oh, my leg. I think you might have to go out of the room, Alan. Because I don't we'll get through it.
I'm going to get a drink from the vending machine.
Come on, we'll go out and we can do it.
Hello, this is Sean Dyche. I'd have loved to sign that Johnny Houston for my Watford, but Paul Lambert bloody got there first. It's the kind of transfer news that really sticks in my throat. I'll do it again, just in case first time went right. Hello, this is Sean Dyche. I'd love to sign that Johnny Houston for my Watford, but Paul Lambert got there first. Fucking hell. I'll do it one more time, last time now. Hello, this is Sean Dyche. I'd have loved to sign that Johnny Houston for my Watford, but Paul Lambert got there first. It's the kind of transfer news that really sticks in my throat.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.